State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us for another one of our Tacky Talks on a Thursday. Hey, Tacky.
Hey, good morning, Joe, and a lovely Thursday, about 11:13. Actually, it's kind of a little cloudy right now out there.
Yeah, we're getting some smoke from the Canadian wildfires, they're telling us.
Oh, is that what's aggravating my sinuses when I left the house this morning and dropped my mom off at a church meeting?
That would be why, yes.
Yeah, because I stepped out of the house and it wasn't a long drive to drop her off, but I mean, why are my sinuses itchy?
Yep, it's smoke particulates from way up in northern Canada coming down and infiltrating our airspace.
Oh, well, climate change is real and affects all of us somehow. So those of us that are a little bit older remember that the steel belt used to send us acid rain.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Something happens in part of the world does affect us in our neighborhoods here. It just reminds everybody that, on a global level, we are interconnected by weather. We talk about global trade quite a lot here about our interconnected economies, but I think we sometimes forget about that. And one of the actually interesting enough during the Cold War, one of the few areas of cooperation between the Soviet Union and the United States was actually weather.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, weather data was one of the things they actually shared information on.
Well, I mean, Siberia is not all that far, right over the top of the
Oh, that's correct. And
world.
you all remember Chernobyl. And the
Yes.
nuclear radioactive cloud that was like floating around in the northern hemisphere, just literally floating around radioactive cloud, which thankfully was a such high dispersion rate, didn't affect pretty much anything outside of the immediate area of Chernobyl. But I remember reading the paper, back when we actually read newspapers, this tracking this cloud of radioactive activity from Chernobyl.
Right. Yeah, of course it was very devastating for folks there for certain.
Yeah, you can't ever go back there. I mean, I know that some wildlife and your vegetation's going back, but that's all to very high toxicity.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So last we talked, there was this marathon session going on Beacon Hill that went to like 4 in the morning.
4 in the morning, try 9 in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Time stands still at the State House. As I said multiple times, the rules say that we end session on August 1st, midnight, July 31st, essentially. And the rules also says that unless someone objects or brings up the rule, then you can continue. It's basically a Robert's rule maneuver, I mean, for lack of a better term. So what happened is that no one objected. This actually put the ball in the Republicans' court because they can stop a session for whatever reason. Both the Senate and the House minority leaders decided not to close the session out by objecting and under the rules going past the hour of midnight. And next thing you know, I'm home at 10 a.m. on August 1st. Again, I do not complain. Quincy and Boston is close. It's not that bad. But it's harder on my colleagues that live in like North Adams and Wilmington and Pittsfield and Provincetown. And those folks still have to get on the road for 3 or 4 hours, depending on the sides, how off the path you are in the side streets or moving through the smaller roads to get home. They had a bit of a rougher time. So, it was not my first marathon, but it's the last two sessions now have drawn daylight that we've done. And it's been a long time. I mean, even when I staffed in the Senate, we barely got to daylight a few sessions, more than a few sessions, quite a few sessions, but nothing like this.
So why, Tacky? Why does that happen?
You're doing what we always do too. Just because we're inside the building doesn't necessarily mean I have the inside scoop. So information gathering is kind of part of what we do in the legislature, along with the media, trying to get glimpses of what's going on around us. And some of us with more institutional knowledge start trying our best to puzzle piece what's happening, or for lack of a term, guesstimate possible scenarios. So the economic development bill was crucial. Obviously, the housing bill was what we did in the end. And under the state constitution, we have to have a roll call vote on any kind of bonding. And the housing bond bill was actually making pretty good progress going into the final night. There were a lot of loose ends they were trying to resolve, which they did. It became an issue just taping the bill up with both House and Senate counsel and the respective committees, housing committee in this case, on an agreement that the language is the language that was agreed upon in principle by the conference committee members. So it's always the details. Just because we say in conference committee we want to do the following, the staff still has to draft it, and attorneys still need to proof it. So housing bill was actually quite expected. We're just waiting around knowing that it's in works. The economic development bond bill is a little bit more complex because the volume of stuff on public policy and the backside of economic development bond that necessarily does not necessarily have to do with economic development. So we unfortunately treat the economic bond bill like it's a supplemental budget. I always call it a mini budget because everyone's trying to throw as much as they can into it that's not necessarily related to economic development directly, including myself. I filed a lot of technical bills to say that, these are all licensing issues that need technical corrections, which is vital to the economy forward because these professions need to have their technical updates. Not the most exciting subject, as you all know. I get the really detailed, mundane stuff, but still important. And the Senate put in language like changing the juvenile age for criminal offenses to age 20 from 18. And so this is kind of disparity between the branches regarding what is public policy. And like the Everett Soccer Stadium gets a lot of news in the globe. I kind of question why we're giving multi-billionaires stuff, but that's just me. You can ask the senators about that. That's my opinion. But you have a lot of those kind of issues that show up in the Senate that we never dealt with in the House, and became a negotiation between the branches of what they want. And I also heard there was a funding formula differential between the governor's office, the House, who had adopted a position of life science formula program, and the Senate disagreed with that formula. And I don't pretend to understand this formula, but the formula was agreed upon that the governor and the House wanted to do. So he figured, the biotech industry would want to do it. And my old friend Ed Coppinger, who was a rep, who now is the head of the biotech council, who basically was sleeping on the bench in the hallway, was jokingly saying, "We should give you back your old office." So there was a lot of movement around in conversation. But ultimately, nothing materializes a final deal. And the negotiations were happening directly between the Speaker's office and the Senate President's office. And that's kind of how it went. Other smaller bills kept moving, like land takings, swapping land from everybody's sensitive land, which is required by the state constitution, move some home rule petitions of various communities, and then waiting for other conference reports to come forward. Like today, the midwives licensing conference committee report came out yesterday, and those bills in the House and Senate wasn't that different, to be honest with you. It was not a massive gulf of difference, so it's really just kind of narrowing out some details. And it can be done in informal session because there's no roll call vote required. So, but things like the healthcare bills were very, very different. And even the opiate, addressing opiate substance abuse issue bills were also very, very different. So this is going to hang it up. And we'll see how those chairs manage the conference committees. Just because the formal session is over, as I keep saying, we are a full-time legislature, doesn't mean the conference committee chairs can't still keep talking. And even if they don't materialize a conference report in the informal sessions this fall and winter, it's entirely possible to get filed a conference report as a new bill next cycle, and we could accelerate the process on having those bills moving forward. We've seen this done before in the previous cycle when the speaker first got in. Some bills were left at the table during the COVID insanity, and Senate President and Speaker's office was able to put those conference committee reports back onto the January calendar right away, and then move them straight to Governor Baker's desk back then. So there are mechanisms in place that if the committee conference committees are able to cut a deal, but we're out of time on the remaining informal sessions, we could take it up really fast in a formal session next year. So procedurally, No, there are ways we can handle this.
Any of your bills left hanging that you'd like to see action taken on?
Well, I have a lot of bills hanging, staff on the list. But it's also different levels of urgency. And some bills are necessarily my bills that I kind of adopted because they weren't a House sponsor. For example, the cloning of cats, banning practice to cloning of cats is one of those bills that is not my bill. It's actually Senator Mattitti's bill, but did not have a House sponsor. So, and we took it upon ourselves to try to move that bill forward because it went through the committee and try to get that done. Some of my housing stuff, parts of it managed to get into the housing bond bill, but did not make it out of the housing bond bill regarding more renter rights issues. So that unfortunately didn't make it out. On the flip side though, Gold Star families annuity increase did make it through the veterans bill. So-called Heroes Act that we did vote on the final day of session, as well as in different things like not charging for license plates and stuff like that. And I understand the Holyoke and Chelsea Soldier Fields home were actually funded by the license plates, the veterans plates and the Gold Star plates. And well, the short answer is that taxpayers are going to have to fill in the
I
gap.
was going to say you have to find the money somewhere,
As opposed to funding it through the license plate fees, the taxpayer is going to have to pick up those costs and we'll just have to bake it into the budget as we kind of sort out how that works. So, I mean, we did get a, actually a pretty good veterans piece. Tax credits for hiring veterans went up, streamlined some of the services, changing the definition of veteran to be more consistent with our. With our own pension programs and credible buybacks and how we define a veteran for the different programs we have. So we try to uniform some of those definitions and consolidate some services with the Secretary of Veterans Affairs internally. So hopefully streamline some of the customer service end of it. So yeah, we've got some good stuff done there. And but we shall see. Some stuff I was able to get my things into. Other bigger pieces that survive, some obviously not. And we'll make a strategic decision and after Labor Day in the office about what we think we can get through an informal session. And I'm not going to tell you to hold this right now because it's a little long, but we're going to have to narrow the list. Narrow it a lot and started talking this week. And you'll say after Labor Day, I'm going to have to start making phone calls to Ways and Means and Speaker Office and others to see what the appetite is to moving some of my other bills forward.
One thing that did make it is online lottery, right?
Came out as part of the state budget. I thought it'd be about 6 months of regulations, maybe 9 months to the implementation. Sorry, State Treasurer's Office seems to indicate they want to take somewhat up to 16 months to roll out. So it's a lot longer than I expected it would take, but again, I'm not the one issuing the regulations and putting out the bids. We'll see how that plays out. I mean, I really have a lot of mixed feelings about this stuff. As you all know, the proliferation of gambling has been quite a bit. If you think about it, we legalized sports betting last session, this year's online lottery. Casinos took almost really, let's be honest, well, 3 years to get up and running because of the sites, the first kind of 6 months to a year is a bit of a wash for them because they have to get, moving. But, once they get past 3 year, 4 or 5, they're just kind of humming along to COVID smack them. And then they, had to recover from that. And it's not always successful. The Springfield Casino, the MGM, is not financially viable, it sounds like. And there's a lot of question marks about what to do with an MGM trying to sort out how to manage or continue that casino or perhaps see a buyer. These are kind of news that you don't hear on our side of the state. There's only two casinos, Everett and Springfield, and Everett's doing wonderfully, actually. Whether you like it gambling or not, the reality is that the revenue levels are actually very good. Springfield, sadly, is not achieving that same level, and Plain Ridge is fairly steady because they have the horse racing component as well.
And that's just slot machines, right?
Yeah, it's basically a slot parlor with harness racing and simulcasting. The casino doesn't take simulcasting of horse races because the tax structure is actually very unreasonable. They lose money on each wager on horse betting. This is something that was overlooked when they did the casino bill, where they wrote in two tax structures essentially into the into the simulcast betting for horses, and they're actually taking that loss on each wager. So that's why they don't have that at the casinos, but they do have sports betting, which is a different tax structure. So strange as you guys may sound, I've been trying to do an omnibus racing bill, even though there's only one track, and that's the reason to try to streamline our law to reflect the nature of the economy of racing and to try to reform the tax component on the casino end, and to ensure that the racetrack gets their share as a result of using a horse signal. So I know that sounds a little bit weird the way it just came out of my mouth, but these are kind of little things I deal with, folks, that doesn't make headline news.
Right. Well, that's what this podcast is for.
Yeah, I deal with complicated stuff. Those who sit on the committee have great appreciation of the chair work on both the House and Senate.
It's mundane technical stuff. Give it to Tacky.
I told that to my Druid leader, Moran. I do get a lot of the not exciting, somewhat boring bills. But one of the bills that we did get was actually very boring, is closing the loophole in direct shipping of wine. You can all direct ship wine. I believe we limit to 6 bottles. However, it was, I wouldn't say word fraudulent, but I will say that there was a loophole in the law that allowed non-wineries to sell you wine. So, you know, you think you're buying from a winery, but the way the law was set up, it allowed certain industries that sell wine that actually has no affiliation with a winery. So for lack of, to simplify the matter using not too many words in the law, we made it clear that you have to be somewhere in the winery process to actually direct ship wine to you.
Okay. You can't have Walmart selling wine.
Yeah, you're essentially correct. It's not exactly Walmart, but your analogy isn't wrong. There are wine groups that are businesses that are able to get a license in Massachusetts under the facade that actually affiliated with actual winery.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. How did the rainy day fund pan out in the end?
Well, we didn't have to tap it. That's
good. Okay.
And we'll see where capital gains go. I mean, you guys know I watch the markets now because of COVID and consumer indexing and all that. And we'll see how the markets fare this year. Home sales are going to probably pick up if the Fed's lower interest rate, but it's still like over 6%. This is a far cry from the 3%, 2% interest rates people were seeing post-financial crisis, you know, after the Great Recession in 2008. But homes are selling. I mean, I look around my neighborhood in Quincy here in Wallston, and I see signs going up. Signs stay up longer.
Yes. Oh, no question it's having an impact. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I suspect that we'll probably maybe get close to, you know, in the zone of our projections, the capital gains, all the capital gains in the state goes to the rainy day fund. It is not part of our baseline budget. We learned that lesson from the dot-com bust, not to do that again.
Right.
So regardless though, the rainy day fund is super healthy at like $8 billion. I mean, it's, you got a budget that's about $57 billion, depending on what's on book and off book. So we're well above the 10% of budget savings. And that's very, very healthy, folks, to have a savings backup of over 10%.
Yeah, that is good. You know, hopefully, bar any unforeseen pandemics coming in the future or what have you.
Yeah, big one, of course, is whenever a recession, you know, those who follow interest rates saw the yield curve on the 10-year bond bill and 2-year bond bill do an inversion, but we'll see how long that really lasts. And, you know, our life isn't always revolving around these interest rates, obviously. But inflation numbers were pretty good this week, 2.9%. Or CPE, core PC, which is, you know, cost of consumer goods minus fuel and housing, was about 3.2% reported this week. And the July number, we are heading in the right direction in terms of the reduction of inflation. I know it's tough to feel because it's very incremental. You don't see just like a cliff effect on inflation reduction. It is a gradual slowdown. So the Federal Reserve Bank is actually doing a pretty good job on this, and consumer behavior is changing, and the airlines are reporting already that bookings for the fall and winter and spring may be very challenged for those industries, despite the fact all of us are paying for like baggage fees, seat fees. I mean, how many more fees they create? I think breathing fees is coming next, air usage fee. So despite them basically just jacking up prices any way they can, they're looking at potential downturn. Hotels are actually the same warning. Airbnbs are giving the same warning. Expedia, Bookings.com, both of them are already signaling that there's a slowdown in consumer spending on recreation. However, gas prices are remarkably stable, despite the fact that the AAA says there's a ton of people driving right now, as opposed to flying to destination. People are opting for driving. I don't know what you guys do for driving. Everyone else drives differently, but driving has become, again, a very popular way of doing vacation for the long weekends or long road trips. But gas prices locally have been fairly stable in the Quincy area, much to my shock.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that they haven't changed much at all, really, in quite a while. 330, 340, that range.
Yeah, and oil prices spiked again this week. Still have a hard time crossing the $80 barrel barrier, but even when it goes up like $4 or $5 a barrel, it's generally reflected on your gas bill at the gas tank pretty quickly. It's very forward thinking regarding gas prices. They don't wait for the gas price because it's cash on delivery. So your gas station actually have to pay cash on delivery when the gas shows up. So gas stations have to respond really quickly to changing the price structures.
Right. It's yeah. They're future buying, right? They're buying it on futures.
That's correct. They have to. Otherwise, they're going to always be behind and take a loss. So they can't maintain their facilities. And I know a lot of it's self-serve, but you still have to pay taxes, insurance. It's a gas station. Things can blow up, right? You still have to have somebody working there. Plus, general maintenance, upkeep of the property, and all the other costs associated with running a business. So, it's interesting. I was not like I'm wishing this. I had expected gas prices to spike in August.
Well, thankfully, things are under control at the moment, anyways. We'll see what happens internationally. There's changes in the Russia-Ukraine war that could have an impact, I know, in the future. And the Israel-Hamas situation is not resolved either.
Yeah, Ukraine war's location is actually kind of fascinating because Ukraine, one, no one expected them to be able to do this, okay?
Right.
Massive and quick incursion into Russian space. Obviously, this plan is to try to get the Russians out of the Donbass in the west and try to push them east, northeast into the Russian territory, try to defend it. Let's be practical about this. The reality of the Ukrainians holding territory in Russia is going to be extremely difficult over the long term. Supply chain is very hard over long periods of time. However, that region actually has a major tr gas transmission line in it.
Right.
And the press kind of talked about it. However, they kind of didn't talk more about how important that gas line is to the Russians because natural gas is fueling this war, essentially.
Basically, yeah.
Russia only has one major export. It's natural gas. And they've been able to try to, people may not realize this, but two things have happened. The US has pumped out a whole ton of natural gas in the last couple of years. Also, the Russians have been intentionally keeping prices low on their sales, which causes deflation of prices everywhere in other countries. So this huge supply increase in the United States, when contrary to what people think, we are the pretty much pushing out like the highest, much natural gas on the planet right now to export to our allies overseas, as well as use domestically, and be also less dependent on Russian gas, which is not a big percentage of our supply, but the less the better. And then, really could potentially cut off money supply for Russians in that province. And that is a huge threat. And speed they've been able to move through. This and we know the media coverage is this area is very pro-Ukraine. We all love an underdog, but it was an invasion of a sovereign nation. And as I like to repeat, history shows nothing happens good globally in a European war.
Yeah, that's true. It does impact the entire world here.
Yeah, anytime that continent goes into a fist fight, the whole planet pays the price. So containment of this conflict, is wicked important in terms of like a big picture. No one wants to find ourselves in a global conflict. And no, this is shocking. I think they're into like day 7 or 8 at this point of
Yes.
just this incursion. They didn't admit was the incursion until like Monday. So that's pretty crazy. And then you have a destabilizing Iran. They lost their president. The Ayatollah was very old. There's another country that subsidized the entire population through oil. That's how they keep the population from, being mad, because they're able to keep food subsidies and gas subsidies through the sale of oil. And the Russians keeping natural gas down and oil down through basically telling people you can buy it cheaper from them. It has an adverse impact, oddly enough, on an ally, namely Iran's ability to provide subsidies. And whether Iran decides to do more in the Middle East is a big question. The reasons is that they're already a domestically unstable economy economically, and whether or not the population is interested into getting to a large-scale conflict could potentially even destabilize the local population more against the government.
Right.
And that's a real factor. The government, of Iran feels like they got nothing to lose and will risk potential destabilization of the population, because at that point everyone's cutting off their fuel supply in terms of they do a greater conflict. It would be problematic for them. And then you could see a perhaps not quite a civil war, because they're not allowed to have guns, the population, but you could see a massive uprising. And if you have enough people, you won't have enough guns on your side to deal with it.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that, but right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it'll be a bloodbath
Right.
if Iran destabilizes.
Oh boy.
Talking about,
Okay.
not talking about, if we're talking about inside Iran, it could be a bloodbath for you.
Right. No, I understand. Yeah.
So no one needs to see that in the area. So yeah, I mean, it also is going to affect food prices. And those of you may have noticed that 80% of all goods ship through the Red Sea, and the U.S. is still shooting down Houthi boats, trying to keep the area stable and keep shipping moving and try to avoid going through Africa down to the bottom there and come back up. And that affects us at home.
That's
And
quite
as you,
costly to do it that way. Yep.
yeah, and also bad for the environment. The goal is to get quick as possible with less, carbon use fuels as possible, keep prices as low as possible at the same time. And large cargo ships are by far the most efficient use of energy to move goods globally. And that's why the US and the Europeans are, the British, the US, the French are sitting in the Red Sea. It's a crucial part of the global economy. The stuff coming out of Red Sea can end up in the LA ports.
Also, since last we talked, Techie, as you know, the rules have changed regarding the temporary respite shelters for migrants here in Massachusetts. It's a 5-day limit now.
Yeah, it's a new, even shorter time period from the first rules change they did about 6 weeks ago. I've
Right.
been receiving some emails from concerned citizens about what this means. You've already seen in media some of the migrants at the Walsall train station. They're harmless, they won't hurt anybody. I'm more concerned about somebody else harming them. We'll see how this plays out. It's hard to send people back out the street with nowhere to go. And I repeat and repeat again, it's extremely rare to find pregnant women and children on the streets of Massachusetts. Not impossible. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it is very rare. And this is something we haven't experienced, well, before my time. I mean, we're talking about like the 70s, early 80s, right? We haven't experienced that here. Other states, it's kind of a part of life. It's sad, but true. And it's something that here that we work hard to prevent. I had a friend email me about this question, and I said that we've done this before. Beyond dollars in emergency shelter is not new, but it was a gradual process of the trend rising with economic indicators showing that it's going to get worse. And 08 financial crisis, it took over 7+ years for the emergency shelter program to start winding down the other direction from the spike of needing housing assistance temporarily. And that was costing us over $1 billion at one point, too. It was never designed to have this many people show up this quickly unannounced with no warning of any kind of whatsoever. At least you have economic indicators. You can kind of start to clue in. You see a whole lot of foreclosures. You see a whole lot of job loss. Logically, it comes along with the need for government benefits because you don't have a job. And you can kind of see where the trend's going to go. So you can kind of figure out a little bit how to get ready. This scenario is just absolutely unattainable because it's just no warning, no indicators, and just keep moving along. And I don't know how it's going to play out.
I know, yeah.
We don't. We'll wait and see how it plays out, and I'm very hopeful. Actually, I'm not hopeful. I'm very troubled, actually. What I'm hoping is that there's no tragedies that happen as a result of this policy change.
Yeah, you know, we saw our local church try to step in and help with a tent encampment that got controversial and had to be removed.
Yeah, tent encampments are bad. Even before the migrant crisis, you may not be aware, there are tent encampments in Quincy. I remember finding one at the Sailors Cemetery at off of Rice Road. They got people telling about the ones in the Rotary at Furnishburg Parkway. They're camped out at the granite quarries.
Mm-hmm.
The local police and Father Bells do a great job on trying to help those folks out. This is not a new thing. I think people have short memories about this stuff, but it's not a new thing. So, big sigh for me. Let's hope that nothing bad happens is all I can say.
Right. It's, you know, it's going to be a federal, it has to be a federal issue in the big picture. I just don't see anything happening until at least after the election.
Well, you notice that this has not become a federal conversation during the campaign for president. It's kind of frightening that all the states and the continental area, you know, except for Hawaii and Alaska, really, it has been impacted by the migrant crisis. All of us have. It's not uniquely a Massachusetts problem. The difference is here is I truly believe we're much more humane people in trying to find a solution for anybody that needs help, unlike other states where they just abandon children to the streets. Bad things happen, by the way, obviously, when you do that, not just because of the health care of the kids, but life of crime isn't that far away.
Well, it's right, and you know, unsavory actors are waiting for vulnerable people to take advantage of, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's no shortage of predators out there that would take advantage of this, and these are families trying to escape predators. So, you know, some states are residents are perfectly fine. They're going to complain about it, and they're going to see it. They're not going to provide a humane solution for it. So every state is different how it goes about it. I agree with the speaker. We are humane people in this state. I really believe that it's just this has become unsustainable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I know everybody ends up shrugging their shoulders because there really is no answer. There's no way forward. It's kind of piecemealed, thankfully, to some of the social service agencies that are stepping in.
No, I agree. I mean, we do have a very strong social service backbone in Quincy. I've been on the board of QCAP, very familiar with different services they have there. However, we are a welcome center. We are not a shelter area. I don't foresee us being a shelter area anytime soon. Supposedly, because I can't get confirmation that the welcome center contract terminates end of this year. I do not know if it's going to be continued or not. The idea of having only one welcome center in the Boston where is it? Chelsea or?
Chelsea, yeah.
Chelsea. It's probably not practical.
Right.
So they got that issue as well. And, you know, I was reminding a friend that it's not necessarily just a housing issue. It's healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Manatee Community Health Center has done a great job on screenings, ensuring things like measles shots, doing the best to address malnutrition, need for emergency care, gynecology, child checkups. This all costs money. And those who do have residents that are migrants, and they have obviously they have children because it's women, pregnant women and children, they end up in the school system.
Right. Yeah, and that's an expense also. Yeah.
And the state's picking up that expense. And then you also have the issue on workforce training. And I know there's some volunteer lawyers, but the state's also spending money getting the working papers. The feds, I think it was afforded to do an emergency temporary visa without working papers for some reason.
Yeah, again, loops that people are falling through the cracks. Yeah.
To us in the human service field, at our level, we think it's kind of common sense that you provide work opportunities if you're going to put people out here on a temporary visa. These are people here legally, I remind folks, stuff that's all double checked at the welcome centers. Putting people to work is pretty important, especially in an economy where unemployment still is just about 4% and well below in Massachusetts. So the workforce shortage continues.
Yeah, I know that there, I mean, folks like organizations like Quincy Asian Resources, I know, have teamed up with Quincy College with a workforce development program to put folks through that program and get them jobs in the hospitality industry.
And also, we do centralized programming here where we also will teach you English and address all your human service needs. So Quincy Asian Resources is actually a very unique model. And Father Bill's is actually a unique model as well. I'll give both of them a lot of credit on uniform services. You bring the services to the people there, and you provide a whole package, and it speeds up the process if it's a single one-stop shopping for someone to get back on their feet or get on their feet as quickly as possible.
That's right. Yep. In
the case of Quincy Asian Resources, Corey does English classes as part of this as well. And a lot of folks coming here are not necessarily English proficient whatsoever. It's not just the Haitians. You also have Afghans who are not English proficient. People forgot those refugees. And we have also Ukrainians. Not every Ukrainian is English proficient either. That's also here on their own refugee status, not temporary visa status.
Right.
However, these are also human resources that we need to invest in. And English classes is part of workforce training.
Yeah, it's a critical part, absolutely. It just gives them the tools they need to move forward.
Yeah, I tell folks, Quincy Human Services is well ahead of the game in innovation, in my mind, compared to the rest of the state and even nationally. And I think that, that is a higher expense, but longer return in investment in terms of a person's ability to sustain themselves, as opposed to kind of piecemealing it over several years where they're struggling and trying to do multiple things at the same time. But, that's just my thought.
Speaking of Quincy Asian Resources, that is, it's August moon time.
It is, and hopefully we don't get thunderstorms. I've been around this festival pretty much my adult life at this point, and the only time we had a shutdown was because of a tropical storm. It was not the rain, it was the wind that was going to blow everything away, and hard decisions were made like 5 days before to postpone it by a week. I think it was 2003, if I remember correctly. So it moves through rain or shine. Hopefully that it'll be thunderstorms in the morning and nothing in the afternoon, perhaps. 11 o'clock start, it ends at 3, pulling about 20,000 people.
Yeah, it's 37th annual this year. It's August 18th, Sunday, and 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. off the whole Coddington Street corridor in Quincy Center, basically.
Entertainment on the main stage starts at noontime after the quick speeches from sponsors and your local electeds. So I will be there again. I've been at pretty much every single one, almost every single one. I'll be out there with the Tacky Chan fans, and some ice pops, and some jar openers, and doing some meet and greet and hellos with residents in the area.
Yeah, it's probably, would you say it's the biggest August Moon Festival in New England?
I can safely say that is true.
Yeah.
It's much bigger than Chinatown's, it's just not what it was when I was a child in Chinatown. Let's just say that. The Water Festival in Lowell also kicks off this weekend as well, but that's also a two-day affair, essentially.
Okay. And
that attracts more than the Quincy August Moon Festival, but is a significantly longer and bigger event against the water. I'm not sure where else is having an August Moon. There's probably smaller ones in other communities, particularly Chinese communities, would likely have it. But in terms of like a street festival, yeah, Quincy's easily the biggest one.
Yeah, I know last year Braintree had a Harvest Festival, the first one in September. Kind of similar, I guess.
Similar calendar problem. So this is a bit of an issue sometimes people don't understand. We do the August Moon Festival in August because it's August, not because it synchronizes with the Chinese calendar, the lunar calendar. Because the lunar calendar puts the month of August in the month of September in our calendar. So a lot of the more traditionalists will hold their August Moon celebrations in the month of September, aligning to lunar calendar, not actually the month of August. However, it's just easier. Let's be honest about it.
It's all about convenience.
Yeah, let's just be honest about this. It's easier just to do it in August because it is the month of August. We call it the festival, not the August Moon Festival in September. Believe it or not, August is actually a, despite the heat and humidity, it's actually a fairly stable weather month in New England.
Can be.
It can be. It has a low probability of rain. This is probably going to be an exception. Low probability of tropical storms hitting us. Generally, they happen. Those will happen in the fall. The nor'easters always generally happen in the fall. And despite the heat and humidity, you can get fairly temperate days here in August. So, interesting enough, for this geographic area, August is not a terrible time to have an outdoor fair, despite the humidity and the heat, because you have a lower probability of other types of inclement weather.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. So, and it looks like it, right now, anyway, the forecast looks good this year. So I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, I'll still cook. As you can all see, if you're using the YouTube and you're doing enough definition, I have picked up quite a bit of color. So you can see some demarcations against my collar over my neck. And I suspect it's going to even be more apparent after this Sunday.
Sunblock techie, SPF 50.
Yeah, and my hair will bleach brown.
Oh, really? Okay. Some highlights.
You will see highlights. There'll be some brown highlights after the August Moon Festival. I'll get a haircut the week after, I think, at that point.
We should remind folks that the state primary is the day after Labor Day this year.
Very early primary on the state level, September 3rd. Those of you who have mail-in ballots have already got your mail-in ballots, I hear. I remind folks, and this is some misinformation going on, that the ballots have been printed for the Democratic nominee, and the answer, it has not been. People kind of putting out some fake news that this primary actually has the presidential candidates on it. It is not. That was March. If you didn't vote in March, clearly you don't know what you're talking about. The ballots for November have not been printed until after the Democratic National Convention next week. So let's just kill that one now. This is getting frightening on people's complete disinformation about this stuff. It is not uniquely Massachusetts, but this is frightening how this information gets out there.
Is it really? I had not heard that, so I wasn't aware that that was a thing.
Yeah, I had some friends reach out around the state asking me of this stuff because it's political call tacky. He knows what's going on. This is what happens to your friends and you're in politics. This is a thing. It's going around that people are calling foul on the Democratic nominee because the ballots have been printed already. So you're actually voting for Joe Biden, not Kamala Harris. So you shouldn't bother voting. And then this is a type of voter suppression.
That's scary to hear. But here in Quincy, the city clerk tells me that there's been a request for about 10,000 mail-in ballots, and she's really urging folks to get them back ASAP.
Oh, absolutely. The time is ticking. It's August 15th. And I'm trying to remember the calendar. Let's see here. I have my little
Your
couple of
cheap
papers sitting
calendar.
on my on right in front of us now. You must your application must reach the local election office by 5 p.m. Monday, August 26th.
Yes.
So you actually could vote at City Hall right then and there, just turn it right back in.
Yes, you can. Starts August 24th, actually. Yep.
Yep, and here's the little form. You
Yep.
can see it here. I mean, you don't have a form. I actually got a mail from city clerk's office in July confirming my residency and my voter status, which I find amusing since my voter status is actually very, very good, to remind me that I can't have a mail-in ballot because I didn't do a mail-in ballot. I'm going to vote in person on September 3rd. My mom's going to vote September 1st and September 3rd. Although I suspect my mom's going to need a mail-in ballot in November. The winter is much harder, my mother.
Yeah, it's nice to have the option, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Just because you vote in person in the primary in September does not mean you cannot get a ballot for voting in November. It is great for a lot of folks. Again, my mom's getting up the years. The winter gets a lot colder. It gets harder for her. It's unpredictable what November is going to be like. And some folks may be in Florida or warmer parts. And as opposed to getting an absentee ballot, you could vote up to 3, 4 weeks, depending on the calendar, in advance of the November election. So yeah, I mean, despite what the detractors say, mail-in ballots are extremely popular.
Absolutely. And there is a drop box right outside City Hall, so you don't even have to deal with the Postal Service if you don't want to.
And if you're super concerned, just go into City Hall during working hours and drop it off yourself.
You do that too. Absolutely. Yep.
And in case you're wondering, the Postal Service does priority on ballots. So
Yes.
opposed to going to substation for central processing, people may not realize that all your mail goes to substation and then it's processed there and shipped back out again. Your ballots are going to be shipped directly from the local post offices straight to City Hall. So the turnaround time is generally 24 hours.
Right. Yeah, it's extremely fast. So it's a very efficient way for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, so people should not be concerned that it won't get there in a timely manner. However, you should get it in a timely manner in terms of the deadlines. Don't wait till last second, but should have enormous confidence that the U.S. Postal Service is very mindful of the mail-in ballots and do prioritize them.
Yeah. It's that happy time, Techie.
My time with Joe has come to a close, is what you're telling
Is that a happy time? Finally, I get to stop talking to him.
me. I thought you were trying to get rid of me again.
No, of course not.
So the State House is open in month of August. People should come for a tour again. Every broadcast now, I've been encouraging people to come visit the State House and take a State House tour. I do think it's a wonderful building, and if you're not looking to go far for vacation, Freedom Trail is a wonderful way to spend time with the family. It really is. And the State House is part of that. Room 42 of the State House is my office, and 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370 is my phone, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tackey.chan at mahouse.gov. I do actually read all my email and the junk mail and the spam mail and the Microsoft quarantine mail. The volume of virus mails we get is quite astonishing once you start going through your email. As well as State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook. You can see my comings and goings, as well as at Tacky Chan on X. And then we have tackychan.org, which is a great reference page, but also a submission form to reach out to me. And then you also have the MALegislature.gov website, the House and Senate clerks are still updating those websites, but I think they're actually almost all caught up now on August 15th. So, as we continue the session and bills will keep moving info sessions, my committee is actually processing home rule petitions. We actually had a long conversation yesterday about where we were in those. You can check on your own regarding the state website as opposed to calling me. And of course, check with Joe in the morning on QATV for your 10 minutes of news. And me and Joe will be here for you, maybe a little bit less because both of us are trying to get time off during the next couple months. But we need a new title for us, Joe. You got to put a subtitle underneath your show.
Okay, I'll have to think about that.
Yeah, right into Joe if you want us to talk about something that you're interested in, because I don't run this show, it's Joe's. If you're unhappy with me, please contact Joe. That's acceptable. And we will see you in about a couple of weeks. So we're all trying to plan our time off around this show a little bit.
Yes. Hopefully, I'll be a little tanned as well when I come back, Jackie.
I hope you get a good relaxing time too, Joe.
Thank you.